Live from Petonia, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be in this big blue world of ours. This is the Cinematica Podcast, our roundup of reviews, news and opinion about the world of cinema. And this is our special summing up edition.
The best of 2011.
And a little bit of the worst maybe as well, and the important bits of information. But basically this is going to be us telling you what happened during 2011.
A lot of us waffling, really.
Yeah, probably a little bit of waffling. And I have to say that in the pre-match discussions, before we turned the red microphone lights on, Simon changed his mind every 15 seconds.
Exactly, I did. Yeah?
And I think he's probably changed his mind since we started already.
It's tormenting me.
My heart's in so many places.
Yeah, it is.
I can't decide.
My name is Dan Slevin, and joining me in the studio is
Simon Weir
and Kaylee Carruthers.
And we're not going to have quite so much structure to the show this week.
It's going to be anarchy.
No weather, no news, no box office, and we won't give away the reason why. But I hope you've had a fantastic Christmas, everybody.
Yes, indeed. Or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or whatever you choose
or
to
Festivus.
Celebrate. Festivus, yes, whatever you choose to celebrate or not celebrate over this end of December area.
And I imagine most of you will have spent Boxing Day at the movies already. And I wonder what it is that you were going to. We were speculating earlier on, before Christmas, that perhaps Tintin would be the big box office winner on Boxing Day. I wonder if that was the case.
I reckon it will be. I think...
Was?
Well, sorry, it was. I think it was. I hope it was.
And if you went to see We Bought a Zoo, did you cry as much as I did? Were you crying buckets?
Wow.
I did.
Okay. And I'm sure I've seen We Bought a Zoo by now too.
Good work.
So, there's no real structure to today's episode. We've all created some lists. I tried to persuade people to come up with their top three, and there was a lot of arguing about it. But basically, why don't we start with you, Kaylee? Here's one of your top ten, and perhaps even in your top three.
Michael, je m'appelle Michael.
That's going to be a clue at the next Lighthouse Cinema Christmas quiz. Nobody's going to get it. The hardest trailer to find decent audio for that I could find. Kaylee, which film is it and why do you love it so?
Coming in my top three, I actually numbered them. I came up with 10 today on the spot. And Tomboy came in at number three. And I really enjoyed Tomboy because I love French films. I have a soft spot for them. I think French, not all French films are great, obviously. You know, like Beautiful Lies, as we reviewed in an early episode. But Tomboy, which we reviewed in episode 7, I really enjoyed because I like movies that make me think and kind of encourage me to have discussion afterwards. And with Tomboy, I was really brought up that question of, you know, if I was a parent in that situation, what would I do? And what would I do with my children? And if I ever have children, what, you know, if they were going through a sort of gender issues, how would I deal with it? So.
And I think that this has been a year where films, the best films, the films that have moved me, the films that have touched me have done exactly that, that have forced me to at least think about how I live my life or how I might live my life or the choices I might make. And I think, you know, some years the films that really strike you are entertainment. They actually take you out of your life. And some years they do the opposite and they sort of force you to look inward. And so I think that's a really good example of something that does make you look in a little bit. I thought it was another film of many this year that were about parenting and about absent parents. I mean, it's not just about the choices that they make. So they're not even there in that film to pay any attention to what's going on for this kid. And I think that certainly during the festival, a lot of the films that I saw in the festival were like that. The Kid with the Bike was a really good example. I can't remember. Simon, have you seen Tomboy?
No, look, I didn't get to see it.
Okay, so pretty much nothing to contribute.
Not on my list.
Yes, there we go. It's not on my list.
We'll try and make sure that you see it before the next episode, so that you can at least then revisit your list afterwards.
And amend
your list, because it is constantly changing. It's a movable feast, your list, isn't
it? I want to know. I wouldn't mind getting some lists from other people. I want some twits or emails, or you know.
Well,
amazingly,
Simon,
enough,
I have 1.5 pages of tweets.
We'll have to do some of those.
Okay. Has anybody chosen Tomboy?
Nobody's chosen Tomboy, but I know there are some coming up.
And we've got some really good two-word reviews, haven't we?
Amazing. Yeah. It's all two-word reviews for the top films of 2011 for our Twitter fans, and you guys have done beautifully. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks very much, everybody, for your support through... this is episode 11 now.
It is.
Of the show. And I personally am stoked at how... the feedback we're getting, the positive feedback, and the contributions that people are making. So thank you very much, everybody, and hope that your 2012 is going to be as exciting as ours. Now, Simon, this first of yours is coming up.
Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, they knew what was happening.
What do you think about selling securities which your own people think are crap? Does that bother you?
As a hypothetical?
No, this is real.
What do you think of Wall Street incomes these days?
Excessive.
By 1986, he was making millions of dollars and thought it was because he was smart.
Simon, that was Inside Job.
Mm.
Why did that one move you so much?
Well, it moved me with, I guess, a bit of outrage. I mean, I just thought that this doco was just so precise, didn't waste anything, didn't grandstand, just went in there and asked some sound sort of questions and put people on the spot, and the answers were quite extraordinary. I think it's a film that it's played a while ago. You could play it now, and it would still be relevant.
It
would be. So I think that's a film that if anyone hasn't seen, and they're interested in kind of politics or economics, they really should see it.
Yeah, it was one of the angriest films of the year, but a very quiet, very suppressed anger. And I thought it was interesting, the choice of narrator, Matt Damon.
Matt Damon,
probably a bit of a Hollywood lefty.
I guess. I mean, I was really surprised when you sort of picked that he was narrating it, because it's critical of all these financial institutions.
And it's critical of government, it's critical of the education system, it's critical of corruption at the very highest levels, effectively.
And what's tragic about it, really, is that it's just, it's one government after the other. It's no change. And even if you look at what Obama's up to nowadays, it's kind of just playing the same game.
Mm. And coming up in the new year, there's a film called Margin Call, which is a fictional film that's inspired by events around the time of the big crash, where those big companies were basically trying to get rid of their toxic, I hesitate to call them assets because they weren't assets at all, but to try and flick them on as fast as possible and minimize their losses.
While still telling people to buy them.
That's precisely right. So perhaps a double feature.
Mm, that'd be a nice
in the future. All right, so that's Inside Job, Simon's first choice for his best of 2011. And we didn't actually get to review that on the show because we didn't exist in those days, but we would have, because we do everything here.
Conceptually, we did.
Yes.
Just a little,
Sparkle.
The Big Bang occurred, and then we just kept on going.
Like cosmic dust. Right.
Here's the first of... I don't get that reference. The first of my choices is next.
This is 2003. This is what the sun looks like, and the stars. This is the president. And this is the sun in 1955, and the stars, and the president. My parents got married in 1955. They had a child, and they stayed married for 44 years until my mother died. 6 months later, my father told me he was gay.
I'm gay.
I remember him wearing a purple sweater when he told me this, but actually he wore a robe.
I'm gay.
He was gay the whole time they were married.
So that's Beginners, If you want a full review of that from the podcast, go and check out episode 5.
Titled, We're Still Beginners.
We're Still Beginners. We're still beginners.
And, if you're confused.
Yeah. And that's, I was really moved by this film, and a film that on the surface has a lot to be depressing and be depressed about. A father dying, a depressed central character sort of trying to find love and not really succeeding terribly well. But I found it really quite uplifting and positive and reinforcing in lots of ways. I know that Christopher Plummer, who plays Ewan McGregor's dad in the film, is very, very hotly tipped for an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor, and I think it would be well deserved. In fact, not just for his performance in that, because he's just been so reliable and so fantastic for such a long period of time. Do we remember The Sound of Music? We're not really allowed to tell you that we've seen a film about tattooed dragons, but he's pretty flipping good in that too. So,
it's okay, Simon. It's okay. It's open to the States.
So that's Beginners. Anybody else seen Beginners? Want to put me right? Do you disagree?
I agree. I think that was. I mean, it's just fitting everything in. But that was one of my. You know, that's a lovely film, and it's got this great sort of optimism to it. This warmth.
It does. It does have a lot of warmth. It's love. It seems to me that it's a film that's about love in all its forms. Love for romantic love. Love for your family. Love for life itself. And you know, maybe. It's been a really tough year for lots of people, and certainly was quite a tough year for me in many ways. And so the idea of watching a film that was about overcoming all of that and just simply getting back to the things that are most important was a really good message for me. And it turned up just when I needed to hear it.
Yeah, not just Christopher Plummer gave an amazing performance, but the whole cast as a whole worked so
as an
well
ensemble.
Together.
Yeah,
it was lovely. So good.
Yeah, there was a real sense that they were a family.
And the dog.
Oh, and the dog,
with
of course,
subtitles.
Got the best lines.
Yeah,
well, kind of.
Yeah, probably a cuter dog than Snowy and Tintin, I think.
Yeah, because he actually had the chance to communicate, but communicated as a dog would. You know, it's great. It's wonderful.
Okay, Kaylee, what have we got from our lovely listeners?
Well, let's start out just kind of throwing out random tweets I have here. So, yes, we asked for your two-word reviews of your favorite films of 2011.
There were some goodies, weren't there?
There's lots of goodies.
Better than the ones we've come up with.
So I'll start at just the top of my list.
In no particular order.
And no prizes, apart from just the love and affection from us this time around. Yes. Yeah.
Some Twitter handles I will say if I understand them, and others I will leave.
Or you could
so
spell out.
Get offended. So Jack-O-Bunny has a good handful. Silent Souls, Liquid Poetry. Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, Telling Tales.
I fell asleep through Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, I have to say, because it was the last day of the festival and it was very long. So I just want to apologise to people who love that film that I didn't make it. Sorry.
And he probably snored.
True Grit, Determined Witticism, and Tabloid, which was another one I really enjoyed, which we kind of battled on here at Cinematica. Yep. Self-Exposed.
Well, nice work, yeah.
Yeah, nice. And we have another one for True Grit from Muse PA blog. True Grit, Just That. Bam! Two-word review.
Yeah, Craig, well done. Okay, and so let's go to our next clip. And Kaylee, this is one of yours.
Je sais à qui tu penses en ce moment. Je ne connais pas de chose plus triste que d'avoir perdu son papa. Nous devons continuer à vivre sans lui.
Bonjour, commissaire.
Votre attention, s'il vous plaît. Victor Costa. C'est celui qui a tiré sur ton papa. Mais tu sais, bientôt je l'attraperai. Ça, je te le promets.
Tais-toi ! T'es en retard ce soir. J'allais partir sans toi, mon vieux.
I've got no idea whether that bit of audio that I cut out there, I mean, I've got high school French, but I've got no idea whether I cut that off in any kind of, in a way that made any sense at all. What was it that we were just listening to? Because it's a film that I haven't seen.
I know, I sound like a hardcore French nationalist.
You're
now.
A Francophile.
Francophile. That, as dramatic and, you know, mysterious and action-y as that sounded, it's actually the animated film A Cat in Paris, which played at the film festival this year.
And I loved it. What is it about? We are going to have to do a little because I don't know what you're talking about.
Right, A Cat in Paris is a fantastic animated film about a cat living in Paris who is
a cat in Paris. You think?
Yes. Who, I'm not done, Daniel.
Sorry.
Deno.
Yes.
No, Daniel is definitely what comes out when people are being stern with me. Yes.
Lovely cat is a cat burglar, an assistant to a cat burglar. And this cat has this lovely little girl who's his owner, but, you know, sneaks out at night and steals jewels and all these riches and kinds of getting entwined in this very exciting action drama and having to save his little girl owner and the mother.
And from what kind of animation is it? It's not digital 3D.
No, it's hand-drawn 2D, and it's beautifully done. It looks like kind of French painting. Like,
are these the same people pastels. As Triplets of Belleville and The Illusionist?
I believe it is.
It is, yeah.
I just saw a little bit of the trailer while I was cutting that audio out, and it seems like it's more like a painting than even those triplets, which were closer to, I guess, Warner Brothers animation or, you know, caricatured people, what have you. But The Cat in Paris, it's like a pastel painting, like fine art.
It is. And it's, you know, it's great for both kids and adults.
Did I say pastel paintings? Because that's actually a non sequitur, isn't it? Sorry.
You can do both. You can do mixed media.
Right, okay.
But it was wonderful. I'm not sure where you would catch it now. But if maybe searching the internet, you can purchase it overseas.
And you might have to. You might have to now watch it in your own home because I don't think that's going to get a cinema release. It's pretty unlikely, isn't
it? No, it didn't get a release after.
And there are two versions. There's a. I watched the English version. So there's an English dubbed version, which is the one that I saw, and then a French version with English subtitles. So I'm not sure what you can purchase now, but those two versions are floating around in the world.
Okay, next film is one of Simon's.
On the 16th and 17th of July, 42, they arrested 13,000 Jews. Put him in the Velodrome d'Hiver in inhuman conditions.
No beds, no toilets, barely any water, and not one image exists.
Weird. I mean, they documented everything, the Nazis. That's what they were known for.
Mike, this was not the Germans, it was the French.
Simon, Sarah's Key.
Going through this list and trying to make up, you know, my top three, and then it was five, and then it was
feel
10.
Free to change your mind now after we've just
I'm
played
I'm tempted,
that.
But, you know, I was just listening to that, and I thought, well, you know, I'm happy with that, because I remember the impact that, you know, the sort of horror of that film, and when, you know, certain events happen, and they really stuck with me. And I think, you know, that's what really, for me, is why I would consider that one of my sort of top three films.
It was a slow burner. A little bit of a whodunit, which is a really good way to get you into a story. Kristen Scott Thomas playing a journalist in France, trying to find out what happened to these people.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a certain scene in the film where I just think, you know, it just really sticks with you. And they do it so well, and Kirsten Scott Thomas is so good in it. So, it's definitely one of the films I wouldn't say I enjoyed, but it had a lasting impression on me.
Kaylee, did you see it?
I did. And the thing that I really appreciated about Sarah's Key is because you see so many war films that depict, a lot of them can depict the atrocities really gruesomely. But I found Sarah's Key, like, there's a pretty grim moment where she goes back to find her brother, which she has hidden. And you don't ever see anything, but you know how horrific it is just because the performances are so good. And this is, like, children who are performing. So it was very interesting and a really interesting look, kind of switching between past and present, and she's trying to solve this mystery.
Yeah, it wasn't the only film about the Jews incarcerated in the Roundup, which was in the festival, and wasn't nearly as successful.
No.
It didn't work for me at all. There was something about the taking one single story and a absolutely awful, pointless tragedy and actually wrapping the scenario around it, which really worked. And actually, I'm not always a big fan of Kristen Scott Thomas, And whereas I thought she was fantastic in this, again, that slow burn really paid off.
And an interesting sort of sideshow for history. Well, not a sideshow, but just an event in history, which, you know, I didn't know much about, that it was, you know, the sort of the French that were heavily involved in this kind of
exactly. It was completely news to me. And I think it was probably fairly not terribly well known to the French themselves, and the fact that two films about the same subject have come out in a very short space of time, I think, means that the French are making a really strenuous effort to reconcile themselves with some of the parts of their history that they may not be all that proud of. And so if you're at the video store, say, and you've got two to choose from, then Sarah's Key is the one to pick, isn't it?
It is.
Next one is one of mine.
Abbiamo in noi quattro vite successive, incastrate l'una dentro l'altra. L'uomo è un minerale, perché è formato da sale, acqua e da sostanze minerali. L'uomo è un vegetale, perché come le piante si nutre, respira e si riproduce.
Once again, I've got no idea whether I've cut that off in mid-sentence or not.
But we sound refined with our foreign film choices.
We do. We're I think, very, very classy, aren't we, in tonight's show?
High art.
Yes. That was from a film called Le Quattro Volte, which I think means The Four Seasons, and that was a film that only played in the New Zealand International Film Festivals and perhaps not everywhere either. And I haven't seen any sign of it showing up on anybody's distribution lists to go back into cinemas, and I think I can sort of understand the commercial reasons why, but I think it's a real shame because it's a very much a big screen experience. That narration that we heard, that sort of lovely deep voice there, doesn't appear in the film at all. The film is completely free of narration or much in the way of dialogue. It really does just look at different aspects of a beautiful Italian village over the four seasons. I'm finding this really hard to explain, except that it's absolutely gorgeous, beautiful to look at, very, very funny in places, very, very sad in places, but without having a narrative as such that you can follow. There's no, you're not following one protagonist through all four seasons. It's just taking a particular angle, but there are connections. You know, you see, as one season is examined, you can see in the distance something that you saw in a previous season, so you know how everything interconnects in terms of the village. I thought it was absolutely gorgeous, and it was a great example of the kind of films that only the festival really can do. And the kind of films that prove that there are other ways to make films these days. There are other ways to tell stories. There are other ways to make you to introduce you to another way of life. And so I can't recommend it highly enough, really, Le Quattro Volte. And I'm guessing, looking at your faces, that... Oh, Kaylee, you've seen it as well. That's right. Yeah, what did you think?
It was stunning. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. It was a beautiful, clean, brand new 35 print. Extra exciting, because if you're a bit of a film nerd, it was projected reel to reel, which means it's not on one big platter. A projectionist has to run back and forth and switch between the reels.
So when you say run back and forth, it's sort of every...
Well, they saunter.
Every 20 minutes.
Yeah, they saunter every, like, 15, 20 minutes.
They have to move a meter.
Yes.
Yeah, put the paper down.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah, hopefully he's not listening.
Put down their sandwich or their cigarette, as it used to be in the 70s.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely beautiful. Oh, and the goats. Oh, what a great story of those goats. And the little baby goat gets lost. And it's like, man, you can't... That's such great drama.
Mm.
And you can't just, you know...
So simple. And it's so meaningful.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's definitely a story running through it, but it's not by any means, you know, constructed. It's just it just happens, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, but that was one example of why I felt that this year's festival was the best that I'd ever experienced. I whether it's the choices that were being made or whether it was the films that were available to be selected or what have you. It really was a stunning festival, and that was a great example of it. So, Kaylee, just looking at the time, I think we're sort of rattling through these pretty well. So, have you got some news? Not news of the week, because we're sort of in a sort of fairly TARDIS-y time machine sort of arrangement here.
Yeah, Mondays there's not usually a lot of news coming through.
Not usually a lot of news, but we can do a summary of 2011's best news, can't you?
Yes. Well, 2011 had a lot of very exciting movie news, which I've cobbled together from several sources over the last, many weeks trying to find some of these news items. So close to home, one of the big news stories internationally, actually, but close to home for us, The Hobbit finally began filming in 2011 after all that hubbub. And
the crew didn't kill the actors and the actors didn't kill the crew. That's, yes, I think, a triumph.
And it's just going along quite smoothly. Hilary Swank made her Chechenian mistake when she agreed to celebrate the Chechenian president Ramzan Kadyrov's, an event, and she was seen with him. Background noise of airplanes. She was seen with him palling it up with him at a private party, and because of the controversy, because he's so well known for so many human rights violations, that her PR company dumped her for it.
Her PR company dumped her. I didn't know that.
Her PR company dumped her for this.
If there was anybody still left working for her, then New Year's Eve would have finished them off, I think.
True story. And speaking of bad choices, Lars von Trier gets banned from the Cannes Film Festival for his little Hitler pun joke comment.
Yeah, he's a guy who's got no handbrake on his brain, has he? And also, I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack, saying, English is a second language, perhaps. Words running away for themselves. But anyway, no, it was a very bad taste. And if you've seen the photos of the event, the look on Kirsten Dunst's face while he's talking is quite priceless.
Yes. Yes.
YouTube it.
Yes. Further down the list, Natalie Portman gets her first Oscar and she has a baby. She accepts her Oscar when she's pregnant with a baby.
And not only that, but she also was in one of the worst films of the year, which was
Thor.
Your Highness.
Your Highness.
Your Highness is definitely one of... there have been some significantly low points in my film viewing.
Because we're only talking about the best... But surely, we should make some reference to the worst.
Well, coming up next, speaking of total film lows, James Franco and Anne Hathaway bombed the Oscars at the beginning of this year, and nobody would stop talking about it because it was so bad. So let's hope Billy Crystal gets back on
form.
Was this
the year that Ricky Gervais insult everybody at the Golden Globes this year as well?
Yes, but he's coming back for the next one as well.
Yeah, I the Golden Globes are... an event that I refuse to take seriously because I know how many of the people there are in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association and why they do it. They're not to be taken seriously, those Golden Globes, and they shouldn't be seen as a sort of prediction of anything.
Why?
Because the Hollywood Foreign Press Association has only about 90 members and they are not necessarily film reviewers or film critics. They are film journalists, often freelance, who have created an association for themselves and spend most of their time when they're on junkets having their photos taken with the stars. It's a big and they now exist pretty much solely to produce the Golden Globes. At least with the Academy, when you know that the actors are voting for the actors, right? You know that the cinematographers are voting for the cinematographers. And you might want to argue at their conservatism in some ways or their being behind the times in some ways, but they're not try-hard wannabes like the Golden Globes people.
No, it's true. Still going with the Oscars, more recently we had Brett Ratner's Oscar fiasco where he quote unquote resigned from doing the Oscars after his Tower Heist blurb about how he felt about rehearsals, and so he's no longer on the Oscars.
Yep, and won't be missed.
No.
No, but his new film, Tower Heist, that's his, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, Tower Heist. That's playing now.
Yes, and we couldn't be bothered to see it. So
we might cover it during the next episode if we feel like it.
Kaylee can't be bothered to see it.
We shall. We've got to.
We do. We cover everything. Mm. Exactly. So there is no can't be bothered, Kaylee.
Mm.
That's why I have the best list of the worst films, because I have to watch them all.
And the top two news stories, according to the websites I went to, coming in, the second biggest news story was the passing of Elizabeth Taylor. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, yes. And the number one news story of 2011, the end of Harry Potter. Could it be anything else?
I don't want to quibble with you, but surely a news story would have to be something that you couldn't see coming for like 9 months. Like, we knew it was happening. So, yeah, okay, all right, we'll give you that. I mean, you certainly got a lot of column inches and certainly got a lot of people worked up about it, and certainly the box office was incredible for it.
And I think that's what these lists were sort of based on, were right. The buzz about, you know, things like that. Boot.
I know that we all have struggled very, very hard to reduce our long list of favourite films of the year down to the three that I've asked you to talk about today. But maybe if there's anything else that you've thought about in before we get into our number ones for the year each, anything else you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I would actually, because my list, I did get my tens. I want to give a. I do want. Actually, yes, I know what you're setting me up for. We have to talk about it. We had the number one film people tweeted about that they loved was Drive.
Yeah.
It was Drive.
Yeah. Is it on your list, Dan?
Nope.
Kaylee?
It's number 5 out of 10. It was right in the middle, and I can hear people hissing at me right now. But I did really like Drive. It didn't make my number one, which will be coming up shortly. But, I mean, Drive was just so cool. And that's the thing. I think that's what people really like about it. It's so cool. Like, it's Ryan Gosling. And
I don't know what I was thinking, really. I mean, it's not on my top list. And, you know, it really, I mean.
So you're changing your mind, isn't it?
Well, I'm just saying.
You're feeling the pressure, aren't you? You're feeling the psychic pressure from Alice.
I'm feeling guilty. It should get its due, because it is such a cool film.
It is a very cool film. It is a very cool film. But the reason why it hasn't made it into my top three, although it is in my. I haven't yet ranked them in any kind of order, because, frankly, that's way more work than I'm prepared to do. But I did a short list of 20, and it's definitely well in there. But in terms of meeting the criteria for my top three, it didn't move me emotionally the way that some of the other films this year did. It didn't make me think about how I live my life, or how I have lived my life, or it was cool and icy in lots of ways, and I could admire the filmmaking, I could admire Ryan Gosling, I could admire the music and the choices and the craft behind it all, but in the end lots of films made me cry this year, and Drive wasn't one of them. So
no, it was good though. And a special shout out to Sakura_59, who's just moved to Australia, so she's going to be our Australian
correspondent,
yes, because she'll be able to see things a few things before us. Her 2011 as a whole was Ryan Gosling.
Mm. Yeah, that was just
Blue Valentine, Drive.
I know, Crazy Stupid Love.
Yep.
No, definitely a big year for the
year
Ryan
of the Gosling,
for the
year
Gosling,
the
Gosta.
Gosling,
the Gosta. Yeah.
But just talking about tears, the only one of my long list of 20 that I think I really want to mention, because I'm pretty sure that nobody else will, and I'm pretty sure it's not on anybody else's top 10 list, because it was a long, long way back, and as Simon pointed out earlier on, it did no business here in New Zealand at all, and that is Secretariat. We're talking about sports films a little bit later on, and Secretariat, I've got no interest in horse racing, I've got no interest in... I'm going back there now. I can feel it. If I close my eyes, oh my goodness, the emotions.
Rolber.
Easy, Tiger.
Yeah,
I have to say that by the end of Secretariat, I was bawling my eyes out at it. It would just pushed buttons for me that I didn't even know I had. And so at some point in the future, I'm going to watch that, and I imagine it'll do exactly the same for me as it did then. So thanks for bringing that back. I'm drained now.
But isn't it, you look at that list, or my list, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I can't, you know, like.
He's wearing the silk jacket right now.
It's the
now.
Year of the doco when you think about it. I mean, mm-hmm. TT 3D, yep. Senna. I mean, they're just Awesome. Yeah,
and
docos.
Your favourite is what? Of all
of
the
those two?
Of the, no, the documentaries that you've seen.
Well, I mean, I had to go with Inside Job. I mean, that's an awesome documentary.
Yeah, but what's clever, the one you've been talking about for the last hour before we came on air that you really said really should have been in your list, and now you can't even remember it?
I can't. No, it's gone.
Bill Cunningham.
Oh, Bill. Yeah, of course. But that's still to come. That's on my list.
Is it?
That's one of my top three films.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't when we...
I made it four.
Yeah.
I've got Bill Cunningham and also Black Swan there. Like Black Swan. Well, the Swan. I really thought it was awesome. Yeah. Well, and, you know, intense and kind of, you know, sticks with you.
All right, let's... Okay, now we're getting to the nub of the point of the exercise. Let's go to Kaylee's number one film of 2011.
Our new Swan Queen, the exquisite...
Oh, no, sorry, the wrong... I've done them in the wrong order.
Well, this is someone else's number one.
Well, it's not even Simon's anymore.
It is someone else's number one on Twitter. Just keep going, just go with it. Just roll with it.
Seduce us. Attack it. Attack it. Come on.
Where'd you get these?
It's nothing. You sweet girl.
Feel my touch. Respond to it.
Someone's hot for teacher.
I don't want to talk about that.
See, that's... I mean, how can you not?
You've changed your mind again, haven't you?
Well, I just... Yeah, it's all in the salesmanship, isn't it? You get a little bit of taste like that, and you go, yeah, that's pretty damn good.
I'd just like to point out that at the end of last week's show, we finished the show with a song from the Muppet movie that Simon had never heard, and he only probably heard it just for about half of the song while the show was finishing.
He just heard, like, one chorus as well.
One chorus, and it got buried so deep inside that he can't stop singing it now. He's just... He will not let it go. So he's very open to suggestion.
A Muppet or a man.
If we can get Brett on the show, you're going to have to do
a duet.
A duet. Oh.
You'll do the Wilbur part.
Wilbur.
Anyway, so what we just heard Black Swan, and nobody's going to claim that from the people around the table.
Oh, you are now. But you're... I'll claim it in my top four.
Okay. All right. That's good. But we do have listeners that adore it.
Yes. Matt Tizard or Matt Tizard. I'm sorry if I don't know how to pronounce your last name. He's great. He was one of our winners of our Iron Lady giveaway contest. His two-word review for Black Swan, best of 2011, was signature Aronofsky. And you have to note, signature is spelled C-Y-G. And so...
Nice work.
Amazing. Amazing.
A punster.
Pun.
Puntastic.
Puntastic. I don't know if it's really a pun if it's spelt differently.
Yeah, there's probably another word for that.
Wordplay of the week.
I should have paid more attention at university.
Wordplay of the week.
Yeah.
And speaking of great wordplay, a lot of the people on Twitter, as we will continue talking about, because you guys have been amazing. You are so eloquent. Oh, 13 Assassins, Joyful Mayhem, The Turin Horse, Apocalyptic Grace.
Nice.
Ata, Light Moves, and Sleeping Beauty, Sublimated Tragedy.
Do you think we should contract out the two-word... analysis?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're definitely setting a very, very high bar.
Yeah,
this is one person. Dilla Monster, we're coming for you. Wow. Also, you have a great Twitter handle because I just can imagine you as this, like, giant killer pickle. Let's be friends.
So, do you want to talk about Black Swan? Or do you feel like you've done?
Haven't we covered it? I mean, I just want to say that I thought, you know, it was just spectacular. And if it sticks with you and you're talking about it for a week later...
Or a year later, in this case.
If any film that you go and see, if it sticks with you and you're still thinking about it, whether it be 24 hours or a week later, then it's worked and you're still debating it.
Yep.
And there's how many films a year do that?
No, well, that's right. And in fact, I think we've got a couple coming up that actually do that.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, let's put you in your place, isn't it? All right. Now, Kaylee, this is your top one.
Talent.
He'll be ranked among the all-time greats.
How do you feel about being world champion?
It's not a bad feeling at all, is it?
Ayrton has a small problem. He thinks that he can't kill himself. And I think that's very dangerous.
Kaylee, Senna.
Mm. Yes.
What do you got for us?
My number one film of the year.
How many times have you seen it?
Actually, I only saw it once. I really want to see it. Oh, no, I've well, I saw it at the film festival. There's mm-hmm. a big group of us because a bunch of my friends, they really like watching Formula One racing. And so I've kind of been brought into this group who likes to watch Formula One, although here in New Zealand it's on about 2 a.m. So I tend to fall asleep after the third lap.
Because actually, you know, those laps, they're all the same.
Yes. Well,
not like a fig on you.
I think it's a that just puts yep. me to sleep. It's really soothing.
Sounds it.
But yeah, I mean, I was never really into sports documentaries before, but now I just can't get enough of them. And Senna was so great. And of course, I was sort of told the story before I went in because I'm, you know, I don't know much about motorsport, but it was great. Like the theatrical version of the documentary was made solely with archival footage, like this beautiful footage from, you know, the 90s back to the, I guess he started racing in the 70s or 80s when he was a kid.
Yep. And those go-karts.
And those go-karts. Mm. And
there was so much footage. There was amazing how much of a sportsman's life is recorded. Even back in those days, they had cameras in the supposedly private briefings before the race. Yeah. I didn't know that they had cameras in those.
That was really interesting part yep. of the film scene.
Oh, the drama. Mm. Yeah, and the conflict. It had everything, didn't it?
It really did. And it was, you know, there was a lot of family footage from his time with his family as well. So that's quite lucky, especially for female viewers. We get to see him, like, driving a boat, all tan, looking super hot, in Speedos. Yeah. That was, you know,
he had a hot girlfriend too.
Oh,
he did. That beautiful blonde girlfriend, which I wish they had more story of it.
But you're showing that when they were on stage together and he's just kind of eyeing her and just chatting away.
That's when they met on national TV,
you know?
Yeah, they met on national television and they started dating from there. They didn't really get into the love story very much. And they didn't I tried to watch the director's cut as well, which has the talking heads put in, but I just fell asleep.
high praise indeed.
Yeah, that worked a treat.
Well, there was so much of Alain Prost, and I was like, oh, yeah. Whoa.
Oh, you can't trust him.
He's a bit dreary, isn't he?
Yes, but it was great. I mean, it's obviously the theatrical version is definitely one-sided. It's very pro-Senna, but the director's cut gives you a little bit more of reality mixed in with it. So it is good to watch both of them.
And Dan, is that in your top 10 or 20?
It's in my top 20.
It's made it
in my top 20.
Yeah,
although, I just want to point out that if I was going to pick a motor racing doco, I would take TT3D over
so
Senna.
Amazing. TT3D was amazing.
It was amazing. And I think the only reason is because when I watched TT3D, I didn't know anything about what was going to happen. It was the first time I'd been introduced to any of these characters, and so the tension was almost unbearable. I actually ended up after that film hating the filmmaker for putting me through it. It was like, I just don't ever make me feel that way again. I gripping the arms of the seats beside me because I was so into it and so concerned.
And a worthy 3D film.
Yeah, indeed. Again, this has been a year where 3D really has come of age, and next year there's some great ones coming up. But definitely TT3D, if you watch it, if you find yourself sitting and watching that at home, it will not have the same impact on you as the being involved in it the way that the 3D does. So I've got lots of respect for Senna, big ups for Senna, and certainly admire the filmmaking and the storytelling quality there. But in terms of its sort of visceral impact on me, TT3D did it.
Mm-hmm. And some of our, we have some tweets about Senna as well. So from Sakura59, Senna was heartbreaking and beautiful. And from Robert Cato, his best of 2011 tweet was, "Abrigato Ayrton."
Oh, lovely. Yeah, nice work, Robert. And just before we go to my number one for the year, I just want to ask you guys, is there anything that you can think of, any trend that you want to see the end of, that you've seen too much of? Or I know I've got a couple that I want to talk about.
I've got to say that there seem to be a number of films coming out about the sort of impending doom of the planet. I'm kind of, you know, I'm over those now. I want to move on to just nicer, kind of lighter stuff.
Okay, message to the world, rainbows and unicorns for please, Simon in 2012, please.
Let's get back into the kind of, you know, 60s groove or something.
Okay.
I'm over the whole young man, boy, whatever, who, like, desperately needs his father's attention or, like, You know, there's just so many films about children who are left. I mean, Tomboy is a good version of that, where it's like, you know, needing support. Yeah. But, you know, like being a little poo face for not being a shh for, you know, not having your father's love. Or it's just, oh, God, just get over yourself. Grow up. I'm tired of watching films where for the character, I'm just like, get over yourself. Get over yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's when you feel that way, then something's gone wrong somewhere. You know.
Yes. I think there needs to be more mature filmmaking that comes through the mainstream.
Right. The two things that I've seen plenty of and really don't need to see again are characters expressing how distressed they are about something by vomiting. Could do without that, and that happens a lot. And the other thing, this was a real trend this year, was people being unexpectedly hit by cars or buses or trucks.
Yeah. It worked well in Mean Girls, but, you know.
I haven't seen Mean Girls. That's a bit before my time. I know. We'll have to do a big catch-up session on that one. I know.
Well, where has it
as a reviewer. As a reviewer. Give me
some films.
The One Day happened in, happened in One Day. Happened in The Debt. Didn't he? The guy stepped out in front of the truck.
That was a planned suicide.
Yeah, yeah, but still, from an audience point of view, from an audience point of view,
Cars are always driving abnormally fast.
Now you might remember what this one is called because I can't quite remember, but a French film that was like The Big Chill, where they all where all the friends go on holiday together. Little White Lies, exactly. Mm. Little White Lies. Yeah. The opening scene of Little White Lies.
Scooter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, that's three. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's three too many. Yeah, it was. You know, I could do with putting that little trend to bed. Actually.
Yeah.
So next is, and because I organize this and I'm by the desk, I get to choose which comes last, which therefore means is best. So
the Waffle King resides.
But I haven't gone through my top 11 yet.
Well, all right, before we have the number one film of the year, then.
Listeners, you can't see Dan Slevin's eye roll, but I can't do that.
Because look, for me, you know, the warm, because I've got some fairly tough titles here, but Bill Cunningham really was just a warm, charming,
is it still playing,
beautiful film. No, it's not long gone though. Right. It's played for a long time. Mm. And it was just such a beautiful, charming film.
I think we're going to see that very, very high up the Academy Award listings for Best Doco.
Yep. And then I just, you know, like films like Incendies, which were just on the fringe there for me.
Agree.
True Grit, you know, that was great. Arthur Christmas for animation. Really? You know, for an animated film?
Exactly. Arthur Christmas is in my top five, actually.
Well, you see, they need a mention.
Well, we shall. If I am allowed the indulgence of gushing over Secretariat, then you can certainly.
And even a film like Another Year, which played.
Exactly. And Another Year was very, very close to the top three and was almost impossible to criticize. There was almost nothing about it that you would find fault with. Immaculate performances, direction, writing. Again, another film, very domestic in its scope, and give you an idea about. I don't know. It just makes you think about your own life and how you relationships with your parents or whatever. So you know, definitely all of those. Kaylee, are there any that you want to mention that we haven't talked about?
I'm just going to throw mine in and then throw back to Simon. He's waving. He's waving his arms.
Executive producer prerogative.
Yes, I agree with Incendies. Very good. I definitely enjoyed it, and I wasn't expecting the ending. Like I did. I sort of saw it coming, but not really. Because it was one of those films where I was so into it, I wasn't like deconstructing and waiting to figure out what happened. It just kind of came naturally. Another French-Canadian film, Heartbeats, by Xavier Dolan, his second feature, I enjoyed. Of course, he made Heartbeats when he was 21. He is still an emerging filmmaker, and he stars and directs and, I believe, writes as well. So it's very self-indulgent filmmaking, but once you get over
that.
That
was the word that I would have chosen. Yeah,
it's very self-indulgent, but it's entertaining, it's kind of funny and quirky, and it's good. I enjoy seeing emerging Canadian talent, obviously. Mm. Of course, shout out to Puss in Boots. And actually coming in at number 10 on my list was Bridesmaids. It wasn't as good as I thought it would be. The trailer sold it really well, but there were a lot of really wonderful, strong female comedians in it, and that was really good. Yep. That was nice.
Right. So. Back to Simon.
Well, I was just trying to think. Oh, yes, that's right. I was just wondering, though, like, if you had to look at these lists and you had to think about New Zealand productions, what would be the film, two or three, if you like?
Right,
you
well, actually, fun,
four New Zealand-made films.
Funnily enough, there are a few on my long list, actually. I really wanted to mention Operation 8, which was a very, very powerful documentary, definitely partisan, definitely taking a particular side, but the kind of filmmaking that is very, very rare in New Zealand. The Orator, of course, which helped launch the podcast back when. And I noticed that The Orator is already out on home video, so I hope a few people found it under the tree.
A good Christmas prezzy.
Yeah.
Yes, and we're still waiting to hear whether it makes it into the top picks for the Oscars.
When a City Falls was another great New Zealand documentary, so I think that was a really good year. But there were, it has to be said, a few fairly iffy New Zealand films in the list. But we won't dwell on that now. There are a couple of other films that I think are worthy of a mention. I think that if the long version of The Trip had been given the theatrical release rather than the short version, that would have been much higher in my estimation. I really loved the 3-hour TV version. Blue Valentine, more Ryan Gosling. And I've really, really enjoyed as the, I think my favourite sort of big action pulp blockbuster movie of the year was Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I really dug. Another Andy Serkis.
I can't go with that one.
What was your big blockbuster? Transformers, isn't it? I bet you.
No,
Real Steel.
Oh, yeah, Real you were Squeal. A big fan of Real Steel.
I gave it a pass mark, by if I recollect.
Oh, we could go and rewind if you want. Yeah. We can go and find out what you said.
I mean, I thought that was better than the previous sort of Planet of the Apes film, but it was just kind of still relatively predictable, I thought. But, you know, it's just me.
Yeah, it is just you.
Just a cheeky monkey.
All right, so let's wrap this up with the film that I think is the number one for the year.
There are two ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. You have to choose which one you'll follow.
Through an alligator.
You'll be grown before that tree is tall.
It takes fierce will to get ahead in this world. Come on, hit me. Hit me. Come on, son.
He's afraid of you. You expect things of him only an adult can accomplish.
That, of course, is The Tree of Life, Terrence Malick's amazing, extraordinary film. And just watching the trailer again online to get that audio out this afternoon brought it all flooding back to me. The beautiful camera work, the fluid camera work and the editing, the fact that you don't feel like you're in a single position around these people, that you're floating almost like an angel around these people. There's nobody moves a camera like Terrence Malick. And but more than that, I was so taken by The Tree of Life, by its belief in the power of love. It's something that we talked about at the beginning of the show with beginners, that whether it's love of God, whether it's love of life, whether it's love of nature, whatever, I found it incredibly powerful, incredibly moving. But it only really worked for me the second time around. The first time I spent way too much of my time and my energy trying to work out what was going on and trying to, work out what I was going to say about it in a review and take a position on it. And it was only the second time around where I sat and watched it and just let it wash over me and decided that I would just experience it, that I would feel it rather than thinking about it. This was a film that I am really glad I saw, because, again, it said that there are other ways of making films. There are other ways of having an impact on an audience. And I think it's Malick leading the way, frankly. So that's my number one for the year, and I think it's been a fantastic year. Who else saw The Tree of Life?
Yep, I saw it.
I didn't. I'm going to watch it on my holiday time at my home cinema.
Yeah,
it does need to be on the big screen, definitely. You wouldn't want to watch it on an iPhone.
I wouldn't I wouldn't look at it in the same way. I found it a bit frustrating, but I saw it once. You know, I guess maybe I didn't need to watch it twice, but it was a film for me that I felt like it was sort of, well, maybe, you know, like you say, well, what is the point? Like, and the point just seems so sort of vague and moving. And I just, yeah, I found it quite, it wasn't like Melancholia, which I was just bedazzled by in terms of the way that it looked.
Yeah.
You know, it was just stunning. And this was kind of grainy and dark, and Brad Pitt was, you know, just this kind of, you talk about the love. Well, there wasn't a lot of love between him and his family and his wife.
But it was lost love, it was broken love, it was love trying to be returned, retained or restored.
Nature
in some
versus
way.
Nature, and you know, nature and all that sort of thing. But I mean I came out of it feeling frustrated. I do remember that very much. You know, like, I was just like, oh, Jesus, frustrated. And the Sean Penn character in it was sort of I don't know, everyone was just so sort of introspective and down.
Mm. Yeah. Yep, and you know what? I have no problem with people not enjoying it. My gut feeling is that it's not so much not enjoying it as not getting it, and I think that there are ways films don't – they either connect with you or they don't. And the choices that I've been making this year in terms of the films that I've been championing – are films that connect with me on some level and produce some kind of emotional reaction. Where so Drive being too cool, too arm's length, too self-conscious of its own style, whereas The Tree of Life felt like I was getting a vision of a creative person's own heart. And, you know, that's what art is really all about, I think. So... here we are. Anything else that we want to say about anything else in particular? Have we got any listeners wanting to contribute to the Tree of Life discussion, Kaylee?
No, there is no... Oh, yes,
there Am I alone? Am I alone?
You're not alone.
Alone Willow.
You're not alone. Because Tin Ribs 27, he saw Tree of Life, but his two-word review was noodle scratcher.
Confused. Yep.
But he did enjoy... Drive. So
great.
There you go.
Yeah. All right.
All I want to say is I'm looking forward to 2012 and what's coming out in that first sort of 2 to 3 months. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's
indeed. Just next week's show, we're going to be talking about some of the big holiday blockbusters, Happy Feet 2, We Bought a Zoo, which has already had a dramatic emotional impact on at least one of us. We've got Albert Nobbs coming up, and then not too long after that, Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, another really big film to talk about. So not really much time to rest on our laurels, not really much time to put our feet up and watch somebody else cook on the barbie.
So when everyone's at the beach, getting a tan, playing volleyball or whatever you do, think of us in a theatre checking out these films for you.
Yep. In air conditioned comfort.
Ah, yes.
But, you know, it always rains a little bit. So, you know, make sure that you've got some plans up your sleeve, some movie watching wherever you may be. And hopefully, even if you're away from the main centres, away from home, you'll find somewhere that's got the cinema. New Zealand's pretty well served for picture theatres wherever you may be.
Rain or shine, that's really strong. And there's plenty to choose from.
And support your small art house cinemas. You know, it's always good to support the little ones. And also, remember sun safety. You don't want to be out in the sun very long, so do take breaks, drink a lot of water,
and go to the movies. That's the end of the tonight show. We'll be back next week. My name is Dan Slevin. I'm the producer, editor. What else do I do? Engineer of the show. Simon Wherry is our executive producer. Kaylee is our news girl and weather girl. This theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can find it at the iTunes store. Just do a search on Earl Van Dyke or 6x6. It's awesome. And we'll be back at the same time next week. Well, maybe
this year.
Next year. Yes, indeed. 2012. Looking forward to it. So it's good night from me, Dan Slevin.
And it's good night from me, Simon Weary.
And good night from me, Kaylee Carruthers. And make sure to go to iTunes and rate and leave comments, because we are up for review and we want to keep, you know, staying on the internet airways. So keep us going.
Good on you. Take care, everybody.